So if we can start to settle back down so we can keep the agenda moving forward. Got about a minute to wrap up your break time conversations. I know it's probably great to see all your colleagues here today. We will have other opportunities.
Okay. Right.
Is there someone on the phone?
You want me to hang up? I'm not on mute. I just don't want you guys in there here. It's inside. Yes.
Okay.
If you don't see any over there.
Okay. Is there someone on the phone? Oh.
If folks will start making their way to their seats. Okay, thank you all very much. Before we start with the presentation, a couple of other items we're going to cover quickly. Eric asked me for the committee members to give a show of hands for those who would be interested in going to a nearby restaurant for dinner tonight, particularly for out-of-towners or in-towners who would like to do that. So if you are interested in joining a group for dinner tonight, please raise your hand so Eric can get a count. Tell me when you're done counting, Eric. M&S Grill, very nice seafood place around the corner. Yep. That's right. Eric, you get your count?
Yeah.
Okay. Lest you all think that I'm being bossy and Andrew's being retiring today, I have an unfortunate conflict with a major event on the West Coast tomorrow, so I will not be with you here tomorrow. So while we are co-chairing, I'm getting to do a little bit more of the badgering today because Andrew gets the full weight of his office tomorrow. So that's kind of how we have this division of labor. And before we start with Chuck's overview, it occurred to us during the break that it would be really, really worthwhile to hear from our major federal partners to see if they have any opening or introductory comments that they would like to offer the group. So purely arbitrarily, Sue, if you could start with NHTSA, and then we'll follow if anyone from Homeland Security would like to offer a few remarks, followed by ASPR, and then we'll let CMS back clean up.
Thank you very much. It's really, is this on? Okay. It's really good to see so many old friends, and I look forward to making some new ones today. I am Susan McHenry with the Office of EMS at the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and we're really glad to see this effort underway, and we have a couple of initiatives that we've been working hard on that I think relate to the work that you'll be doing. One of the projects that I have the real joy of overseeing is our effort to develop our National Emergency Medical Services Information System, NEMSIS. And it's well along its path. We've now made it through three levels of approval with HL7 Standard Development Organization, so we're kind of moving into the real health information technology arena, and we're very excited about that. We now have 30 states submitting to the national database. Everybody's working hard on it. And our next version of NEMSIS, which is version 3.0, is going to be much more robust relative to the various time-critical conditions and really enable us to measure performance in those areas. And so I think that it will be a really good resource to help, and will also be kind of a sequel to what happens in the hospital. So I think that we can really look at a whole system of care through some of those measures. So we're very excited about that. And I'll be glad. I'll be around. Noah Smith and I will both be around all day today. So if any of you have any questions or anything, I'll be glad to answer those. And I'm just going to leave it at that for now because I know you have important work to be done. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Susan. Joe Morris, would you like to give some Homeland Security remarks? Not to put you on the spot.
I really don't know if I'm qualified. I've only been here since March, so I'm still in the steep learning curve of Rick Patrick and his tutelage, so I'll hold off right now.
Okay, very good. Dr. Margolis from ASPR?
It's a pleasure to be here today, and and I'm looking forward to the conversation. I would like to, on behalf of ASPR, tell you how excited we are about this particular project and how important this is for us. And I think that the work that has been done up until now has been outstanding. And I'd like to also encourage the group to make sure that we consider some of the broad systems issues that might help us get our head around regionalization of emergency care services, in particular things like emergency department and EMS system capacity and capabilities, and emergency preparedness and resilience are really important issues for our office as we are trying to build a healthcare system that is efficient and effective every day and also is capable of responding to disasters and public health emergencies. So I'd ask that you make sure that you think about those kinds of variables in addition to the very important patient care kind of individualized variables that are indicators of quality emergency care.
Thank you. Dr. Garrett, would you like to make some remarks?
In really doing great things in emergency care. So I would like to make a shameless plug at this point.
Dr. Rapp, CMS, if you could speak to him through a microphone, that'd be helpful so we can capture it. You can borrow one of the.
So thank you, Art. So at CMS, we were very supportive of this project too, and I'd like to just give a couple of perspectives on it. As we think about measurements. So where we are right now at the CMS level, and we do a lot of quality measurement, and those quality measures are incorporated into a variety of programs. We started with just quality improvement, and then we moved to pay for reporting, where we publicly report information, and now we're in changing how we pay individual providers and professionals for their care based upon that. So that is focused at the provider level, at the professional level. We spend a lot of time distinguishing one from another and so forth that way. But at least from my perspective, we're hoping to get out of this is not that. We're not trying to measure a particular hospital. This is about a system of care. And what I want to just sort of emphasize from my standpoint, it's not even about regionalization of care. It's about measuring the care within a region, within an area. And I'll just give you sort of an example. We have measures that we apply to hospitals on the time for percutaneous coronary intervention of 90 minutes. So we measure that for every hospital in America. And with those, we publish that information on the website. We exclude people if they're transferred and so forth, but it's designed to say what percentage of patients that come to this particular hospital will get that within 90 minutes. When you do it at the system level, that's not what you're interested in. You're interested in patients that have the condition that leads them to fall within that type of measure. To what extent do they get that if they are in a particular geographic area or within a system? It doesn't matter what hospital they go to. It doesn't matter what EMS service they call. It doesn't matter whether they come by a car or whatever, but we're interested in how well that emergency system works. Now, part of it might be structure. It would be better to have designated hospitals perhaps and so forth, but that's really, you know, people might disagree with that, or it might not turn out to be the case. We might think that's the case, but it may not be. So I just want what I don't think we need necessarily is to be able to measure the degree to which a system is, quote, regionalized. What we need to be able to do is have a framework for measuring the quality of care. And when we do that, there are different kinds of measures: structure, process, outcome, and cost. And don't forget about the cost piece of it, because that is very much on the front burner of concern, at least at the federal level. And I think it's really nationwide. What are we going to do about the cost of healthcare? So I would look at measures that way, those different things. So structural measures might be to what extent that people have transfer agreements and so on and so forth. But that's really not getting us to what I think is of greater interest, which is outcomes, cost. Processes of care are important, but again, we're sort of de-emphasizing that at this point. So anyway, I just want to make those points that mainly it's not about, quote, regionalizing care. It's about how well the care is delivered within a region.
Thank you, Dr. Rapp. I also wanted to extend a very special thank you and a welcome to Kate Goodrich. Kate manages the NQF contract for HHS. And really, on behalf of all the HHS family, we really appreciate the great work you do, Kate. Would you like to say anything? I have a few remarks for the group.
I just want to say I'm really glad that I was able to come today. It's great to see this group of people and all of my federal partners in this effort, and I appreciate the comments thus far. I think they're absolutely right on target. So looking forward to the day. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Question?
Sometimes HRSA offices don't necessarily speak to each other, and since I'm part of HRSA, and Andy, we've just kind of gotten together. I work for the Emergency Medical Services for Children program, so I just want to make sure that I'm putting a bug in everyone's ear to make sure the pediatrics are included. And what we do within every state and U.S. territory right now, we have performance measures that they need to report on. So we will have data in August regarding designation of hospitals within their state and also interfacility transfer guidelines and agreements. So we will have some of that information from every state and U.S. territory in August. So please feel free to utilize us, and I will keep probably hitting you in the back of the heads and making sure that pediatrics are included. Thank you.
Knowing some of the people around the table, I can assure you that we will not ignore children. Any other comments from federal attendees before we go on with the program? Okay, we are still ahead of schedule, which is good. And Dr. Cairns, you have the floor, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Kellerman. And let me just reiterate what a pleasure it is to be with you. This has been a project between the Department of Emergency Medicine, the University of North Carolina, as well as our colleagues at NQF. And it's really been a pleasure and, frankly, an honor to be involved in this project. We're just going to give you an overview in this session of the environmental scan. I know that all of you have a copy of it. And so I'm just going to briefly go through the process we followed because it certainly serves as a resource for our discussions today on the framework report. And the second aspect was to give a brief overview of how we approached the framework draft. Now, there are key components of the framework draft that, frankly, we think we need your input on. And we want to be sure that people understand and accept some of the premises. So there'll be a more extensive discussion of those key terms of the guiding principles and of the domains later on in the day. So this just serves as kind of a brief overview. But please feel free to stop. We want this to be a conversation. We want this to be a discussion and as iterative as you all find valuable. So the first slide, just be the introduction. So this is just directly out of the environmental scan. The first comment is that the premise here is that efficient resource utilization is paramount to providing effective quality health care. Second, that this concept of regionalization has been identified as a potential method for improving medical care through this efficient resource utilization. And you can imagine that one of the key terms we'll be discussing this afternoon is going to be regionalization. Because we just heard what Dr. Rapp's concept of regionalization may be, and that may differ from some of the current practices of regionalization. Next slide. And while regionalization is clearly not a new idea, we've been serving people across geographies in an integrated way in trauma, in heart attack care, stroke care, evolvingly in cardiac arrest care, pediatric care. But certainly, it's become a very functional aspect with lots of heterogeneity. And so honing in on which aspects are important for quality, efficient, effective care across populations and regions will be the focus of the environmental scan. Next slide. So the National Quality Forum is engaged in an effort to establish NQF-endorsed consensus standards that evaluate the regionalization of emergency care. So that was the purpose of the environmental scan, is to support this effort. Next slide. And this scan included a review of projects and measures, as well as to identify measurement gaps of regionalized emergency medical care services. So next slide. The core research questions that we were tasked with taking on. The first one, what current performance measures or standards exist that apply to regionalized emergency care? And at what level of development or implementation are these measures? The second key question, what current projects exist in the realm of regionalized emergency medical care services? And we felt it important to look at an overview of projects because they can provide a context for these measures and, frankly, can help inform the context of emergency medical care services across a wide range of settings, across a number of different aspects of systems, and across different types of patients. And then finally, where do gaps exist in current measures? Next slide. So the products of the scan were to, one, provide a list of performance measures, both in current use and the pipeline. And the pipeline has a very technical term at NQF for these regionalized emergency medical care services. Describe these existing projects and then provide an analysis of measurement gaps. Next slide. So you can imagine the task of taking on this issue. While there isn't a technical definition of regionalization, and I suspect that we might have a wide range of opinions on what that would be, we were guided by consensus documents that have been recently developed in order to provide a context for measures. So first of all, we look for measures of product of emergency care that included care that is time sensitive or of high acuity. A working definition of high acuity, something that was time sensitive and was life-threatening illness or injury. Second, a measure or project of regionalized care was now within a system that facilitates delivery of care that is not universally available. And so, for example of this, given the acute myocardial infarction example that Dr. Rapp presented, aspirin is pretty much universally available everywhere. PCI, or percutaneous intervention, is not. So you can imagine there are going to be a number of performance metrics in aspects of that care across settings that are both uniformly available and wouldn't be included in this, but then some that are going to be distributed unevenly across a region or a population. That would be included as a measure or project for this screen. Next. So the exclusion criteria are measure or project for non-emergency care or that's not within the regionalized system. And another aspect of this is not just care that's universally available, but also care that does not involve a system of both in and out of hospital components, recognizing that there is going to be a spectrum of care across these settings that's going to contribute to a patient outcome, to a system performance, or an integration across various settings. We're going to talk a little bit more about that this afternoon. Next slide. So what were the results? Well, we identified projects and measures using this evaluation of both regionalized and emergency care. The Norton ghost just showed up. It resulted in 11 domains of what we call domains of regionalized healthcare services. And we had to put in a specific definition for the technical aspects of the report, and that was now emergency care, treatment of high acuity and life-threatening conditions in an expedited fashion, recognizing that timely care of emergent patients may prevent mortality or significant morbidity. That was kind of the standard for the environmental scan. And so this included out-of-hospital areas, emergency departments, and other high acuity areas within hospitals. Next slide. So the search strategies. We identified both formal critical review approaches as well as reviewing the NQF measurement library. We reviewed the recent consensus conferences. It's already been mentioned that the Society for Academic Emergency Medicine had a recent consensus conference. The NIH had a series of roundtables looking at emergency care research. One on neurology and behavioral emergencies, another one on medical and surgical emergencies, and a third one on trauma, emergency trauma. We also noted the IOM workshop on regionalization of emergency care, and I participated in the ASPR's regionalization roundtable. After we reviewed those consensus documents and reports, we then searched out experts in the area, in the areas of EMS, emergency care, critical care, nursing care, medical care, and biopreparedness to identify other projects and measures that weren't captured in the formal literature, consensus conference, and measurement review. These identified measures and projects were then screened by these inclusion criteria to find those that might relate to regionalized medical emergency medical care services. Next slide. The scan was then refined to focus in on these emergency care issues within regionalized health care. When you do that, the 11 domains become 8. In the next slide, you'll get an example of what this process looked like. So we had 11 domains of regionalized health care that were identified. The first was trauma. The next was stroke. The third was acute myocardial infarction. The next one was cardiac arrest. The next was critical care medicine, including sepsis and medical shock, pediatric specialty care, including neonatal care, toxicology care, specific veteran affairs networks of care, psychiatric care, data management perspectives, and disaster preparedness. When they were filtered by, for the purposes of this environmental scan, this definition of emergency care, which is health care that is provided in an emergency department or emergency medical services system or acute care areas of a hospital. Emergency care refers to the treatment of high acuity and or life-threatening conditions in an expedited fashion, recognizing that timely care of emergent patients may prevent mortality or significant morbidity. So that was then the criteria for which these were screened. 8 domains remained: trauma, stroke, acute myocardial infarction, cardiac arrest, critical care medicine, pediatric specialty care, toxicology, and psychiatric care. And then within those domains, we looked for specific projects or measures for time-sensitive, acute, or life-threatening diseases. Definitive treatment is not universally available, and therefore we require a systems approach and care that relies on both in and out of hospital care. Next slide. I'm not going to go through the numbers. Jeff Williams deserves an awful lot of credit, both public and ongoing, for literally going through all of these sources, identifying appropriate domains, lumping them into usable groups and buckets, applying the filtering criteria, and then identifying in the tables that you'll see in the appendices those specific measures, as well as the basis and state of development. Next slide. And so when you do this, you ended up with a sample frame of over 1,000 measures, and the final source was just 210, and that's how we've been able to result with the final number of measures that are included in the report. Next slide. Of these measures, if you look at just where they are, they turn out to be impressively in acute myocardial infarction with 11, and then we've got measures that are 9 in stroke, 2 in trauma, 4 in cardiac arrest, 4 in pediatric specialty care, and interestingly, despite the importance of these other domains, there were a number of projects, but very few measures. And frankly, that's the take-home from our environmental scan, is that we did a fairly broad review of issues in emergency care, and we really did not find a large number of performance metrics that have been widely accepted and or utilized. I know that's probably not a surprise here, but it's impressive when you start to quantitate it, given the impact of emergency care on the health of Americans. Next slide. So does anyone have any questions about the environmental scan of what we did? It is completed. It's up on the NQF website. And we certainly hope that it's a valuable resource as we move to this phase of the framework report. Jesse.
Thanks, Chuck. Really great work. One of the questions I have in one of these discussions came up in some of the small groups for the 2010 consensus conference for SAM. But why was the exclusion criteria kind of non-time-sensitive conditions? What did that kind of come up? And, you know, specifically to think about, you know, the overall proportion of people who come into the ED with these time-sensitive conditions, it's actually relatively small compared to the other folks who are there. You know, specifically people with complex medical conditions who actually may get their care in one system, but they may be transferred to another system and have all their testing redone? And was there any consideration given to looking at care coordination?
So thank you for that question, Jesse. We identified a number of gaps. And one of the key areas that we identified, and again, I'd just like to thank our reviewers and our partners in review of this document from ASPRS, HHS, and others. They highlighted some of these needs in terms of non-emergent care. And so you will see in the draft of the framework report that on the last page, 15, number 27 in your included documents, we have an area that we've proposed for future research. And so the need for development of new measures or adaptation of existing measures to ensure measurement of systems, and not only elements of systems. And we have to look at both how transitions and communications between units of service within regionalized systems work. Since most of the effort has focused in on the individual units themselves, as Dr. Rapp pointed out. It's not patient interaction with the healthcare system or a patient symptom to balloon time and acute myocardial infarction. It's currently reported as emergency department to balloon time. So I think we're trying to get to those broader issues as you talk to coordination and communication. And clearly, structural issues. So emergency department boarding, crowding, ambulance diversion, and how this affects utilization, as well as how does this affect utilization in the context of the growth of the need and demand for emergency medical care services by numerous folks, including non-emergent conditions. And then how this will work in the development of the healthcare system as it undergoes not just response to growth and demand, but also evolution in terms of other forms of payment. And then these other areas where there may be important quality measures that may not have hit the specific disease conditions. So, Jesse, that was a long-winded answer to say, please look at the draft report on page 15, number 27 of your materials, and we expect and hope that we'll have a lot of input today on those kinds of issues. Jeff, did you want to add anything to that?
I agree with Dr. Cairns.
So glad that people are listening. The floor is open for comments or questions. Dr. Martinez.
Yeah, just to add on that comment with Jesse, because I think you've been some of the meetings we've been in, the big turning point in this was the IOM, really looking at that group. And what's interesting, and I just go with your comments just to give feedback to the committee, is Einstein says what you believe is often determined by what you measure. One of the questions we had was all these people who get transferred and go to another facility, what percentage of them are discharged from the ED, meaning that they didn't need to be transferred for at least procedural issues? And what we found from going to a lot of the big data sources, including Hearst and others, is no one knows because they don't measure it. And so it's an important aspect of us to look at in terms of performance of the system, not just the smaller group, but I think Dr. Carrigan calls them time-sensitive conditions or something like that. A lot of people transferred for belly pain or chest pain that weren't really STEMI. And so we just should keep that in the back of our minds as we go forward.
Rick, thank you for those comments.
Others? Yes.
Looking at all this from the point of view of acute neurology and acute neurosurgical issues, there's really a significant gap in the measures that are available for that. And if a system ever needed regionalization, it would be acute neurosurgical care because the resources are limited, the facilities are complex, and at least anecdotally, I have knowledge of a lot of situations where the delay in neurosurgical care or the absence of neurosurgical care has led to significant problems. So I would hope, regarding what was just said, that we are able to at least try to develop some measures to look at that, because I think that's a significant weakness in the entire system dealing with this acute neurological emergencies that come up and with the lack of neurosurgeons that are available to help take care of these problems.
Yeah, thank you very much. In fact, we think this is an important area, both in the general area of trauma as well as in specific conditions. And then imagine if you go across the developmental spectrum from pediatrics to geriatrics. There's clearly going to be a need.
Brendan. Chuck, I wonder if your group, the task that you was given to you was to do an environmental scan to see what the lay of the land was. And I sort of, I get that, but I wonder if it a little bit pigeonholes us into, you know, repeating the past instead of drawing a blank slate and thinking about how we could restructure this. And I think that's a trap that we should address early on, because if we're happy with the, if we were happy with the system that we had, we probably wouldn't have asked you to go back and look at it. But in going asking you to go back and look at it, we're starting from, you know, the past.
Brendan, excellent point. And I'm going to use that as a transition. So let's go to the framework report. Because I think that this is a critical learning that we got from the environmental scan, is that in a fairly comprehensive, formalized approach, we found this relative paucity of information and measures. And we know that there are huge gaps and needs. And I think that this framework report can provide a pathway, if not explicit direction, on where we might go to address those concerns. So here is now just a brief overview of the draft. Again, you all have a copy of it, and we're going to go over some very important components of this draft later on today. But just to provide an overview then about how we decided to framework these issues in a draft report for your consideration comment. So the first was provide a context and direction to key healthcare system stakeholders regarding the evaluation of regional emergency medical care systems. So to at least provide a context for you all to give us input on what you think is important and what those key issues might be we need to address, Brendan, in order to move forward. Second is to propose a mechanism to identify the current measurement landscape within regionalized emergency medical care systems, as well as gaps in measurement. So now that we've had a formalized review of what's out there, what it should it look like moving forward, and then to identify where performance measures are needed in this evolving area of healthcare. And hopefully, and we're convinced, that parts of this framework, if not all of it, will serve as a catalyst for the future development of measures and measure concepts, because it's just too important for us not to utilize this approach. So that's at least a broad overview, Brendan, in order to try to take on some of those key issues you've identified. Next slide. So the way that we've outlined this, and again, this was in conjunction with NQF and our federal partners, was to approach it by getting the definitions of key terms down. This is the third promissory note I've said that we're going to address it, but we will address it. Important terms, emergency care, regionalization, these kinds of issues. We're going to delineate the purpose. Next. We're going to introduce an episodes of care paradigm. This is a care paradigm that NQF has found valuable as they take on new areas of healthcare to identify measures. And I do think there's applicability to emergency medical services care, but there are some limitations. Next. To identify some domains of measurement for regionalized emergency medical care services. Next. To generate guiding principles, which may not only provide guidance to this framework report, but to future endeavors in this area. And so we'll spend some time in terms of what those might be. Next. And then to develop criteria for evaluating the measures within the framework. And we used as a basis for the draft the current NQF guidelines. They've clearly been successful in developing and guiding the implementation of care guidelines across a wide range of areas, and clearly taking that approach to emergency medical care services in a regionalization paradigm could be a valuable start. Next slide. So we did want to introduce this idea of the episode of care approach. And this, again, is included in the draft framework report that you all have access to. And in this approach, you have a population at risk. This is called the phase one aspect. There's the evaluation initial management of disease, the phase two. And then there's a follow-up care, or a phase three. So in this generic episode of care, there are three specific phases. One might call the first phase prevention, second phase evaluation, initial management, including potentially emergency care, and phase three follow-up care, outcomes, and further intervention. So then at the end of the episode, you look for risk-adjusted health outcomes, mortality, clearly one of them, but also functional status. And then in line with Dr. Rath's discussion, risk-adjusted total cost. So in the evaluation of appropriate times throughout this episode, you look at key patient attributes for risk adjustment, inform patient preferences, the alignment of the care processes with these patient preferences, and the assessment of symptoms, functional, and emotional status. So we're going to briefly talk about how we apply that in this draft to regionalized emergency medical care services. Next slide. So in this paradigm, we took the example of an acute myocardial infarction. So you can imagine that a phase one, while valuable, we don't do as much with risk adjustment prevention, although there may be an opportunity in phase one, certainly in phase three. But one thing that you can do in preparation for an episode of care with a patient would be to have a regionalized system, or at least an encompassing system within a geography and a population that designates where needed resources are. So in the case of acute myocardial infarction, where the cath labs are that are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and can provide timely care to patients delivered there. Another example of what you can do prior to the onset of a clinical episode is to have an emergency medical services triage and destination protocol for STEMI, so that the paramedics, 911, and ambulance folks know where they're going to take a patient who has an acute myocardial infarction, independent of where they live or who they are. A third potential component is to have a communication technology that will enhance and guide care, the care continuum from EMS, emergency department, cardiology, hospital resources. So those are all components of this phase one that are all in place prior to the clinical episode of acute myocardial infarction. So within this phase two, now that the patient has symptoms and dials 911, is how can we earlier identify acute myocardial infarction, in particular STEMI, ST segment elevation, acute myocardial infarction, the time-sensitive type? Can that be done by EMS personnel? What are the care process measures that contribute to the early identification? What are the care process measures that are consistent with high acuity care that are life-saving, for example, in an episode of acute myocardial infarction? What are the timeliness measures? Recognizing that time and mortality are closely linked in this condition. How do we optimize communication between the units of service, between the EMS, emergency department, cath lab, and any specialty services required? And then what are the standards of care that are necessary to provide high-quality, appropriate care to patients with acute myocardial infarction, and how that should be coordinated across these different specialties? And then the phase three approach would be post-percutaneous intervention ICU care, and what measurements would be relevant to appropriate care and outcomes, care coordination measures across these various units of care, including rehabilitation, and how do we enhance communication between providers, both within the acute episode of care and potentially with the care provided by a community health provider. And the end of the episode could be everything from death, functional status, neurologically intact, and so on. So when you look at appropriate times throughout the episodes, we've got patient-oriented intermediate outcomes. We look at assured transitions across these units of service during this episode of care, and that we have appropriate measurement to facilitate comparison across similar regionalized systems in different organizations. And Jeff, you spent some time coming up with what some of the challenges and limitations of this model are. Could you highlight some of those?
Sure, of course. That was an excellent overview. I did want to add two other comments as well before we talk about limitations. The first was one, I think, benefit of the episodes of care approach is that it allows us to be patient-oriented. I think at the end of the day, we're looking at improving the quality of care delivered to a patient. And so we felt that this was a good model to be able to take a patient through a system from when a care episode, using the term, begins all the way through to, as Dr. Martinez points out, he's either discharged after transfer, which is obviously not the optimal outcome, or receives definitive care. So we thought that, and I think Dr. Carr made an excellent point, that in applying to this model, I think where we've been in the past, at least as much as I've been able to catch up and read in this area, is essentially phase two, and we're evaluating care, and we're looking specifically, and most of the time, at process measures, but looking at this sort of episodes of care model allows, first of all, the measurement of structures and systems that are in place potentially in phase one, and then also allows evaluation of post-care coordination. Did care occur the way that it should have, et cetera, potentially in phase three? Clearly, this is a little bit of a paradigm shift from the initial episodes of care approach developed in some of the prior NQF endorsed frameworks, but this is how we sort of envision the episodes of care approach working in this area. So as you chew on that for 2 seconds, I'm going to flip to the limitations. I think that to put this in context, one benefit of episodes of care that I just said is essentially you're looking at care that occurs to a patient sort of almost in real time. The episodes of care approach doesn't necessarily, and I think that there are ways to address this, but doesn't necessarily focus on whether that care was appropriate. So I think Dr. Martinez's point about whether or not, for example, a transferred patient is cared for appropriately towards the end of the episode may be something to be to emphasize, potentially in phase three or wherever. But I think one potential limitation is that the model does not necessarily focus on whether care was appropriate. EMS provider identifies a STEMI, the patient's taken to the cath lab, the cath is done, the patient goes to the post-ICU, post-PCI ICU care, gets excellent care. Well, you know, are we focusing on whether or not that patient actually needed to go to the cath lab? That's sort of that may not be the best example, but the point is that limitations arise when you consider measuring care across the board. You don't necessarily address whether or not the care needed to occur in the first place. A second limitation is that if you'll focus on the box at the bottom regarding emphasizing measurement to facilitate comparison across similar regionalized systems. So a regionalized trauma system in one area of the country may be very similar and have similar outcomes to a trauma system in another part of the country, but individual efficiencies and individual practices in each system are not necessarily highlighted by evaluating simply one episode of care in one system. So I think that as we consider this model, we should place special emphasis and find some place to put comparison between systems so that those efficiencies can be shared and potentially impact systems across the country. I think those were the two main limitations we thought about. Clearly, there are potentially others that I'm sure some of you will address, but we hoped basically to provide a comprehensive model that would allow for structural issues that come up, process issues that come up, to be, at the very least, categorized with this model. Thank you.
As we go forward and we're looking at, you're worried about sort of the overarching concepts contributing to our missing the fidelity within individual regions. And in other words, there's some regions that do things very well at the grassroots level. And by comparing them or looking at them sort of with overarching brushes, you may miss that fidelity. As we drill down and get to the individual measurements that we develop, won't some of that loss of fidelity go away or not?
No, I think so. I think that's an excellent point. I think when you drill down to the measure level, and you assume that measures are going to be applied similarly across systems, that will go away. As Sally pointed out earlier today, I think that the point of this conference, to some extent, is to look at the framework as a whole. So I agree with you. I think that some of that will go away, assuming that the measures are specific enough to apply across systems. But I think that the framework should somehow address your point, should perhaps state that explicitly, or state that, you know, while we realize that there are some, you know, trees lost for the forest, that will happen over time as the framework is implemented in a given system.
So if I could just follow up briefly on that, but I think it's a really important comment. So imagine that you have a system where the paramedics can read the 12 lead ECGs and then determine the next available hospital. And you've decided to distribute both the hospitals and the paramedics in a geographically uniform way, so the access to care is similar across that system. That would then require a measurement of absolute time from interaction with 911 to say balloon time as a measurement of the performance of the system, as opposed to just saying we have a triage destination policy in our system and therefore meet the required performance metric. So I do think that when you put it in an absolute scale, you can find optimal kind of measurements, but there may indeed be structural measurements that aren't necessarily linked to absolute changes in outcomes in an episode of care.
Jeff and Chuck, I'm curious if you had an opportunity to apply the model to one of the domains that's not condition specific and for instance more developmentally specific, and the reason I ask is just to give you a concrete example. A vanishingly small number of children with time sensitive conditions actually show up at a place for definitive care at initial presentation. Only 2-3% of severely injured children show up at a pediatric trauma center, for instance, initially. So I'm wondering about the ability of this model to incorporate a heavy dosing of triage beyond EMS in the facility, interfacility transport to definitive care, the kinds of activity that would be more germane to a population-based time sensitivity occurrence than a condition-specific occurrence where we're looking for a triage at the field level and appropriate disposition there.
And Joe, thank you for that example. In fact, we played a little bit around with a pediatric model as well for episode of care, and again, look forward to the input of this group as to whether or not these examples are valuable as we approach the framework. But I'm going to move back to this particular example because in many cases, and in North Carolina, we track every emergency department visit. We also track every EMS visit of every patient every day. So we've actually been looking at how this happens across the state. And it's remarkable how many STEMI patients are taken from the field to a hospital that doesn't have a PCI capability and are then transferred to another one. So I think it's somewhat analogous to the pediatric trauma patient who gets sent initially to a hospital with the thought of stabilization, again, just for a descriptive term, and then gets transferred for definitive care at another center. And I think the wisdom of that strategy, I think, may need to be addressed. Certainly one of the aspects, as we look at optimizing systems, back to this example, acute myocardial infarction, is that there is some thought of doing direct field to resource appropriate hospital transport directly as opposed to going to an intermediate hospital. And you can imagine if you look at a timeliness measure under phase two, the third one, that you get much lower times with direct field triage to resource specific hospital than going through the intermediary community hospital. So, Joe, I think this is a really important aspect to look at, and I think it's one of the key components, at least we identified, in using this framework.
I would just add one other comment in answer to that question. I don't think that the episodes of care approach is necessarily limited to in this way a particular place that the episode has to begin. Clearly, when dealing, for example, with pediatric specialty or any other specialty for that matter, I think that an episode of care can begin whenever the need for a regionalized system is identified. I don't think it necessarily has to begin when the kid's belly starts hurting at home or when 911 is involved. I think that the episode of care can begin whenever the need for the system is identified, whether that be in the ED, whether it be on the floor in terms of understanding the need for transfer to a higher level of care. I think that's a good point. We should probably address that.
I have a process suggestion, and that's going to be, given that we all have these cute name tags, when you have a question, if you'll put it sideways, that'll give me a sense of the queue. I'm not sure these things won't fall over, but we'll try that. And so there is a hand here, and then we'll go to you next.
Thanks, Art. I want to build a little bit off of Joe Wright's comments and also the comments made by our colleague from CMS, both of which take up, I think, from some of the concepts that were first enunciated, not first enunciated, but strongly enunciated at the IOM regionalization conference. That regionalization is not centralization, necessarily speaking. In some cases, it may well be. But it's a reality of life that not every region is going to have every resource immediately available to every patient. And even if it did, the patient might not choose to avail himself or herself or his or her child, of that resource. And so I think in building any sort of episode of care model, we really have to pay very close attention to the issue of sustentative care, not just definitive care. What can we do to begin the process, efficiently and effectively, at the first receiver level, so that the process of care can begin in an appropriate fashion. I recognize that's a slippery slope, because of course, when patients end up in non-definitive care facilities getting definitive care, getting sustentative care, they tend to stay there longer than they might, and that too can impact upon outcome. But I just urge us as we go forward thinking through this model to remember that we can't just be thinking about the definitive care piece of it and all the bells and whistles that you've listed by example in this episode of care model. Thanks.
Can I comment just briefly, Arthur? So we agree with you, and in fact, I think this also speaks to Jesse Pine's point on non-emergent care. Just because we've decided to come up with a technical definition of emergency, and again, we look forward to this group's input on what that might be. If you look back at the previous slide, if you could do that, Eric. If you look under appropriate times throughout episode, is number two bullet, assessment of informed patient preferences and the degree of alignment of care processes with these preferences, and we need to keep that in mind. And I think it's into the NQF version of the framework and how that applies to our framework, I think will be very important to continue.
I'm wondering if there's any intent to exclude any geographical parts of our country. And the reason I ask that is one of Dr. Kern's comments about going in the PCI example, there are lots of places in this country where going to the PCI center the first time is absolutely the wrong thing to do. And so one of my interests, being kind of a rural guy, is making sure the system rewards people for doing the right thing, and sometimes that's not going to the specialty center the first time.
Thank you, Gary. I'm smiling. This is a research question that we've had in North Carolina. Since you all may be familiar, we've regionalized DemiCare voluntarily in the state. And we actually have areas of the state where thrombolytics are given by paramedics because the time to get them to a PCI center physically is just too difficult. Having said that, I think you can move it from PCI to, say, reperfusion therapy. And how do you then optimize reperfusion therapies to resources, geographies, and populations if time is an important component? But let's not forget that, Gary. This is a really important issue. And our hope is to not exclude any region of the country. Clearly, our experience has been to be inclusive in our state. Remember, we have mountains, we have coasts, and we've got some rich urban places. We've unfortunately got some very poor rural places. So I hope that we will maintain those discussions.
Nick.
Do you want to comment?
I think you're starting to address what my concern was also. From the pre-hospital perspective, many episodes of care sort of require you to know the diagnosis in advance or at the beginning. And from the pre-hospital perspective, that's relatively uncommon to start with that approach. So could you address that, please?
Nick, thank you very much. One of the premises of emergency care, and I think we need to reinforce this in the definition, is that we deal with undifferentiated patients. And, for example, in acute myocardial infarction, when you start looking at populations and geographies inclusive, you find very different answers. So one of the benefits of our state is that we can look at all these complaints as they show up in emergency departments. And it turns out that less than 50% of patients over 80 who present with acute myocardial infarctions present with chest pain. And you compare that to 85% in patients less than 4 years old. So you even have to be careful on a symptoms-based approach on differentiated illness and injury. And I think that is a key component that we need to recognize, that patients don't present with diagnoses. They present with conditions. And we may want to address that in terms of our definition of emergency, for example. If you all agree.
Chuck, I've got a few questions, but I will weave them in whenever we have flags. But I will start at the beginning, which is back to environmental scan for a moment. There are a number of ARC-funded evidence practice centers in the country that have done systematic reviews over the last several years. I've got the privilege of working with one in Southern California. I think RTI has one close to you all. And they have a very structured process for ascertaining the literature and filtering documents. Did you all follow that process, or is your process different? And the reason I say this, in my little piece of this world, which is cardiac arrest, your scan did not pick up all of the really noteworthy reports. And so the current draft is excluding a couple of papers that I think were, and data systems that were very relevant. So I'm just wondering how you got to the measures that you did, and whether, in fact, there may be others in some of the other domains that are also not quite, not, haven't made the report yet.
Art, thanks for those comments. Number one, we didn't follow that formal approach. I'm familiar with it. I was part of the technical center at Duke for RTI in terms of looking at some of those issues. To be honest, Art, I think if we did that, we'd find even less measures than we found. We did set up certain parameters, though, that may have excluded some of the measures that you thought should be identified. We ended up with over 1,000 projects and measures, but as we went through the filters, we did put very specific filters on it. We put through the filter that it had to fit our definition of emergency, that it had to fit our definition of system, and then it had to fit both emergency and system in order to be included as a project or as a measure. So there are a number of measurements, for example, in cardiac arrest that are clearly valuable, time to defibrillation. One of the challenges, of course, is how does that apply across the system? And so we were trying to come up with components of how we would put specific process measures in this broader regional context. But we may have gotten it wrong, Art, and we look forward to further suggestions on how we might include it. A second key component were those things that we named that are systems and structural and process issues. So, for example, another component of cardiac care are these systems such as the Ontario-based projects on advanced cardiac life support, where an entire system has been put together and demonstrated an impact on outcomes. If those components aren't identified into a system approach, then they wouldn't have made it into our screen. But clearly, they're effective when applied. So how we can identify measures and even projects that inform those measures would be very valuable. So I would look forward to your inputs.
Specifically, I'm thinking, you know, you have OPALS, ROC, several others, but the CDC CARES registry is not cited. We've known for 15, 20 plus years that return of spontaneous circulation is not only a proximate outcome measure for a well-functioning EMS system, 911, bystanders, first responders, and paramedics, but it is by far the most potent predictor for a successful outcome with good neurological status at discharge, and neither of those made the cut for the first draft. So, I don't want to dive into the weeds too soon, but it would seem to me those are examples of the process. Now, that's leaving aside a whole other conversation we'll have later, which is where the holes that we need to be conceptually advising EQF as we go forward, where we don't have measures today but want them. But that's what at least jumped out to me. There may be others in other domains, but that's the one that I know best.
So good points on all those. We clearly are aware of the OPALS group, I intersect with the ROC group, and I'm going to let Dr. Sayer comment on how many of those findings have come out in terms of measures and performance measures that are used for that purpose. I know they show up in the standards and in the emergency care coordination. The emergency cardiac care guidelines group has been doing a lot of work with that.
I kind of agree with Dr. Kellerman in that I think part of it gets the definition of what you mean by a system here. So if what you're saying is that the measure has to touch maybe two different organizations at some level, that's perhaps the threshold here for something to be included, I'm reading. But I also think that there are probably measures that impact what happens to patients further down in that system, that if they're not optimized in the beginning, and I think that was part of what the comment was over here, are not going to allow for high-quality care to happen later.
Ryan, and then we'll go to you, Tom, because your side's been...
And I just wanted to point out that if you look at the list of projects, the entire American Heart Association cardiac arrest guidelines are listed as a cardiac arrest project.
Just to further flog this point, I agree completely with your concern. And as an extension of that, one of the things that bothered me, and before I start, I have to give you the prelude. This is a great document. And I congratulate you on your effort. It's a phenomenal effort, and it's sort of always going to be somewhat doomed to failure because you're never going to be able to set up the parameters to actually capture completely. But I think that's what the group is here for, is to add individual experiences and fill in some of the gaps that are obvious. But continuing with that theme, one of the things that bothered me a little bit about your approach, which I agree with, I like the episode of care. I think it's a great way to sort of look at the system. But it leaves off a big hunk of the front end, and I don't know how far we want to go with that, and that is access. since if you want a buzzword in medicine these days, access to care has got to be there because it's going to become an increasing challenge. And as you know, 20 years ago at the CDC, we were debating trauma systems, and we had this big final fight as we came down to inclusive versus exclusive as opposed to using the regionalization word. The concept was divided around the access issue. And I think it's something we resolve with the inclusive system is allow the access for the patient. And that's sort of missing in your approach right now. I think you can add it on. And I think the group needs to decide how far towards access they want to go, because that can be another whole topic. And again, I don't know where the group wants to go, but I think it's something we should explicitly define that we're either going to go there or not, because right now it really isn't dealt with very much. And as an extension of that, the impact which you allude to but don't really go into, and that is the impact of disasters on access in the system. And again, that may bog us down for the next 2 months, and we may not want to go there. But I think explicitly we should deal with the concept and put it where we want to put it.
Ron, thank you very much. And what a key issue. And so we talk about infrastructure, we talk about diversion, we talk about overcrowding, we talk about rural versus urban. Really, we're talking about access, and I think that we need to address it. How we address it, I think, is going to be a little challenging, because I think we're going to have to, when you try to do a scan for performance measures in these things, it becomes challenging, especially if you want to have them have an impact on mortality or significant morbidity. However, that doesn't mean that we don't need them. And I think the framework can provide an opportunity to identify those areas where we need better performance metrics, and we can define what some of the key gaps are. You had made another important point. Did I address your questions, Ron?
I don't think there is an answer you can give. I think it's something the group, I just think, needs to wrestle with, because I think it's something we need to come up with at the end of the 2 days.
Disaster. Thank you, sir. I agree. And so disasters, now imagine the idea of across a geography and a population, regionalized emergency care, where there's a surge or there's an overwhelming incident. And you can imagine that you could have even an episode of Care Approach to such a thing, because you've got preparedness, you've got response, and then of course you're going to have to figure out the planning and integration for the next one. And unfortunately we've had too many examples where we haven't done phase three after that.
Chuck, just a quick point of clarification. As Ron said, nobody's here to criticize you or Jeff or the report, but to contribute. And because we've got three cards up, and I'm sure we'll have more, you're welcome to respond if you think there's an immediate. But it's also, I just want to make sure we get all of the ideas out on the table so NQS staff and the group can hear them, particularly as we barrel into lunch. So we've got three, and we'll just move around. So it'll be Tom, and then Christy, and then John.
Thank you. I wanted to piggyback on Gary's comment about the system doing the right thing in the first place. You know, destination and location of the incident is not the only variable. If you have services that are not available in the first place, it could change the appropriateness of going to a place for stabilization versus going on. And a part of that is communication and making sure that the right resources are sent in the first place. In many systems, there are no choices in very rural areas. In many systems, an early decision has to be made, and I think all of that has to be a part of whether or not the measure was appropriate given the circumstances in that area at that time. I hope it makes sense.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that we include discussion about telehealth, the regionalization, access to care, all of these issues, cost. We can't always take the patient to the expertise. There's a lot of times we're going to have to do the opposite. And there's a lot of sophisticated telemedicine networks across the country that we could look into and explore how we could build off of that.
you're being quite modest. I believe that y'all run one of the most sophisticated in the country.
We do. In emergency medicine.
John.
I just wanted to build on what Art said, and that I think that the environmental scan is excellent and well thought out. I was surprised to see that only two performance measures surfaced in trauma, considering its history back to 1966 and the number of studies done. I'm sure there's lots of reasons for it, including even that some of that early work was never computerized. I would mention, though, that the systems guide written by the college is probably the most recent iteration, the living organ of the 2008 HRSA document, and it contains over 100 citations in it. Would be, and I'm sure you waded through that, but there are many measures that are in there that are currently in use that have actually proven their worth. But somehow escape recognition by the methodology that was used. So I just bring that up as a point.
Yeah, these are good points, John. And it's one of the challenges because, you know, we identify projects. So you'll see that, you know, we have a pretty broad swath of projects. So, you know, similar, you know, to cardiac arrest, but clearly there are guidelines and there's evidence-based and there's a lot of different components to it. The translation of those into measures that have, you know, that then have reduction in mortality or significant morbidity is where some of the challenge in our screen comes up. So that does suggest that there are clearly successful endeavors that are going on. And frankly, we recognize trauma as the earliest and potentially one of the most comprehensively studied. So how we translate those projects, those learnings, those findings into performance metrics that kind of meet these criteria. I should tell you that one of we didn't go into our next level of performance metric evaluation because NQF has a very formalized approach to what's an acceptable measure. But what some of the things that we look at are things that not just have evidence behind them, but they're not universally applied and therefore have incremental value. And there are a number of other components of performance metrics that we think may be valuable for acute care. We cited one of our papers from 2008 Yale's Emergency Medicine regarding that, but that's just something for this committee to discuss.
Or can I follow on?
Yeah.
And I think it's important as a group that we don't lose focus on some other things. And I use this example often. The Brain Injury Foundation's guidelines, I believe it's Chapter 2, the use of oxygen, says that there's no evidence to prove that oxygen is useful. The study was never done. You can't prospectively randomize people to be hypoxic or not. There are going to be some things that are just evident that may not be captured with a rigorous approach like that, but I don't think that they can be dismissed out of hands.
Kathy?
I wonder if maybe at this point it's reiterative, but I think we're sort of tying together the inclusive system and the issue of access, because they really are one and the same. And then that obviously parlays into the comments from the group that's watching from over here that has to do with then building systems capabilities and capacity to deal with it. Not every hospital needs to be able to do everything for everyone, and yet we would expect that there are at least some basics that can be accomplished to determine whether or not this person needs more subspecialty care and then pass them further down the line. What those metrics are to say that it's an inclusive system, to say that it's access rich, versus one that sort of is more relegated to preventing patients from having access. I don't know what those metrics are, but that certainly would be an overarching principle that I think we need to address, and it certainly wasn't something that you all set out to do in your project, but would be something that I think would be of value.
Can I briefly respond? Yes, when we looked at just kind of our intellectual approach, so I'm amongst friends, and I know they're on the phone too, we really sought to identify what would be potentially unifying themes across the regionalized emergency care system. So the first kind of threshold was those conditions for those patients in whom it's been proven that time is a key component, and time measured in hours and minutes, not days, weeks, and months, and that there's evidence for reducing death. And so when you start taking a look at other issues, such as access and process and structure, that there are going to be some challenges. Our, again, intellectual approach initially was, well, what are those structures and processes that help support the care of those time-sensitive, life-threatening conditions? So that is not inclusive. And we recognize that the evidence may not be there in a rigorous fashion for very important conditions. And we've already discussed the idea of non-emergent conditions and of disaster planning and surge.
Jesse?
Great. Thanks for those comments. Well, one of the issues, key issues that comes up logistically with performance measurement is the attribution to a particular system or hospital or physician. When it comes to regionalized emergency care, this becomes a real challenge because, you know, when someone comes into a emergency department in a hospital and you're trying to get that patient to the cath lab quickly, you kind of know who the players are in that system, and if there's a delay, you can figure out what happened and attribute it to the hospital who ultimately is responsible for all those players. When it comes to transferring patients between different systems, now you're talking about EMS, you're talking about, you know, pulling that back to closer to when the emergency actually starts, then the level of attribution becomes a lot more complex, because it may be a delay could happen at any of the parts of the system, and ultimately, the question is, when are these measures intended to be applied to hospitals, regions? I mean, where, I don't know if there's been a lot of discussion about where the met.
Jesse, good point. And clearly, we had a lot of internal discussions on it. And so one of the filters that we put is that it needed to be a system, and it needed to have different settings contribute to the outcomes. Antibiotics for pneumonia, for example, wouldn't make it in our measurement framework, despite evidence that's been presented in its adoption as a national metric, because antibiotics are pretty universally available, and the system is within the emergency department. So that was at least the basis of the scan. You know, there are critical components that could occur outside the hospital. Like, I'll go back to the fibrillation time, where, you know, there's clearly evidence to show they're beneficial, what that time might be, and how you attribute that to the system, the paramedic, the 911 group, the availability of AEDs. These are challenging questions.
Chuck, given that I see no cards up, I'll take the chair's prerogative and launch another question. Let's take the episodes of care paradigm for a moment, and I look at the document, and I see you've pulled out candidate measures or domains. I'm not sure I see yet much clarity about where holes might be, and let me give you sort of put this into an episode of care, if you will, for a moment as to possibilities. Imagine that I'm a patient with severe pulmonary edema developed over 15, 20 minutes. I call 911, I'm hypoxic, I'm in ventilatory failure. I'd want to know from a quality perspective, first of all, if the hospitals in my area have been designated as whether or not they're a cardiac receiving center with the various modalities and skills to manage. So designation of capabilities. I might like to know whether that hospital is in fact available because it's not so overloaded with patients that it's on diversion, or the cath lab is in fact open and staffed and the cardiologist isn't either in the cath lab tied up or on the back nine of the local golf course and therefore not available to intervene. I'd like to know whether or not the paramedics have to call each hospital individually to find one who can take me, or whether they can call a single number or radio or whether others, or look on their dashboard of their ambulance and know that my hospital is open and available or is not for whatever reason. I would want to know
whether I got diverted once, twice, or three times before I ended up finding a hospital that was able or willing or had to take me in. And then obviously I'd like to know much more basic performance measures like time from I dialed 911 to the point that I did receive PCI or whatever definitive care I needed. And most importantly, I'd like to know ultimately whether I lived or died and had a decent outcome. Some of those, I think, are in the candidate list now. Others aren't yet, and maybe because we don't have good ways of measuring and many regional systems don't have these capabilities today. What are your thinking and your colleagues about sketching those sorts of measures out, particularly issues, again, of capability, capacity, diversion, some of these performance metrics that could really potentially have a very major effect on outcomes? And I might have missed them when I went through.
No, you didn't. And we think they're critical. And in fact, we think that's the real value of the framework. So I'm going to go back to the episodes of care paradigm, though, and say that I think it can encompass an awful lot of those components. I think it can encompass whether or not that hospital has the structure and staffing to handle a wide range of acute cardiac emergencies, or let's make it broader to critical care emergencies. I think that you could have a component of what the communication systems are between these units of service, such as EMS and emergency departments, in order to better match patient need with available resources. And I think that would also speak to a lot of issues in terms of emergency department capacity and capability and how it communicates with EMS to match during times of stress or surge or diversion the needs of patients with its availability. And there were a number of other key components within that episode of care that I think could be put in this framework for phase one, structures, systems. I think the other issue, in fact, I took down Dr. Rapp's comments here of structure, process, outcomes, and costs, and I think we could probably, if the committee's interested, put a component of that in each one of those phases, because I think you hit it. Undifferentiated patient with shortness of breath, wide range of potential needs and causes, time sensitivity, given it's an acute condition, and now we've got to understand how that episode of care plays out across those units of service within that geography. Understanding time and life threat are going to intersect in the needs of this patient. Is that fair enough, synthesis?
Yeah, I think so. We've got three signs up now, so we'll move up the table this way. Dr. Martinez, you're up.
Yeah, just very quickly, and unaccustomed as I am to being a heretic, I'm glad you made that last comment because I wanted to mention that with Mike. You know, the current system as it stands right now, we don't measure a lot of things, talking about gaps. And to me, the cost issue is a big one because the system as it sets right now is killing a lot of our hospitals. It's just killing them. And so, you know, what we proposed several years ago was to flip it around. So it was a two-way system, not a one-way system. But I'll tell you, Chuck, I just stepped down a role. I had 103 hospitals, and probably half of those were rural. And we've gotten to the point to where they transfer as much as they admit. Mm-hmm. And those patients, as you follow them up the chain, you know, our surgeons were great about that, looking at over-triage, because they wanted to get rid of that because of the cost involved with that. The vast majority of those patients are discharged from the receiving facility. And so it's really not a procedural issue. So I really wanted to put on our
radar.
Rick,
it just occurred to me, I'm not sure everybody would follow. When you talk about the system is killing our hospitals, you're talking about a system where everything goes to the
because the natural end of this is we're going to build a 40-story building in the Midwest, Omaha, and we're going to just transfer everybody there. And so what happens is that the smaller facilities are losing their capabilities and their knowledge and everything else. The patients aren't repatriated. And so, you know, I go back to Dr. Carr's comment, is that if we put the measures to reinforce what's already done, then we end up with that issue of people won't see the effects, and so we can't correct it. So I just think the cost issue has to be in there somewhere.
And that fits, again, into Christy's comment earlier about do we have systems to get information and decision-making to the bedside of the first
hospital? We started bonding last week, though.
Right.
Very
good.
Can I comment to that? When we implemented our telehealth, we had that same problem. Everyone was being transferred to our one trauma center in the state, most of them discharged. Now we have a 20% increase in local admissions to the rural hospital because we've helped them stabilize
feel comfortable with the patient, and they don't have that expertise because they only get one cardiac arrest every 3 months. So they lose that, and they're not comfortable, so they want them out. So telehealth just can support that and keep them in their rural area.
And Chuck, just a measure we may not have, but I throw it out there, is that the capacity of the system rises when that communication, you've been very good about mentioning communications and those links, those handoffs, but you see that with telestroke, that they over-transfer everybody, and over time the knowledge goes up and they're able to discern better what needs to go and not go, and so the local hospital becomes better, but it's also our key access points in America.
So, for example, playing on that thought, if we are measuring things like movement of patients, we might also consider measuring the movement of CT images so that we can make clinical decisions with the doc in a small or nurse practitioner in a small hospital and say, this brain injured patient does not need to come to me. This brain injured patient can be managed by you at your local, you know, et cetera. So I hear what you're saying. Brendan and then Jesse, or you took your sign down.
I was wondering, and I don't know who to even direct this question to, but if someone could tell me, if this is outside of the scope of what we should be talking about, I think that's okay. But I'm sitting here thinking about how this will be someday operationalized, and I wonder if that needs to impact the way that we talk or think about these things. And specifically, I'm wondering, in the world of the ACO, if it makes sense to be thinking about how the episode of care model interacts with the world of the ACO, are we thinking that multiple hospitals, independent of payer, are going to be jointly held accountable for the outcomes of patients in whatever that catchment that Jesse was referring to is? If are all the hospitals in my hometown of Philadelphia jointly responsible for the cardiac arrest outcomes of the city? And somehow CMS incentivizes or disincentivizes the communal performance? Because it's hard for me to get my head around how the end piece, who pays the bill at the end of it, is related to the phase one building of the system.
So first of all, really good comments, and I think that they, frankly, just a quick comment on costs, telemedicine, resource matching, and potentially implementation. We recognize that a lot of these issues are challenges, and if you take a look at the last few pages of the draft framework report, we put in some criteria for evaluating measures. And these are from the NQF's perspective, and then we put a little bit of a spin on it and we cited it. The key components are, is it important? Does it contribute to the quality of care? Scientific acceptability? Are the, you know, how is the measure defined? Strength of evidence, the validity? Usability, in other words, how meaningful are they going to be to intended audiences, and what's the relationship between the measured use and the outcome, and is it of sufficient magnitude to make a difference? And is it feasible? Do we have the data readily available across the systems of care? And is it cost effective to implement the measure? So obviously, I assume in the telehealth world that you all found it to be useful, feasible, and valuable. And that may be independent of the scientific validity of the approach. There may also be other aspects where feasibility is just not available in order to do it. But I think the idea of connecting patients with units of service to effectively, efficiently, and cost-effectively provide their care may be a valuable thing for this group to consider.
I'd like to add to that. Because this is a measurement framework effort, it also provides a fantastic opportunity for all of you to inform where the data platform should be going. So if there's an ideal set of measurement that you can understand or intuit today, for example, but you realize that it might not be feasible right now, we still would like that captured in this framework report. It also serves as an important signal, getting all of you together, of where we might want to continue pushing in order for those measures to then be feasible and usable in the future. So do not limit yourself with just what we're able to do now, but continue to push us, and we want to capture that in this report.
Dr. Mayer, actually, just because everybody has so much time, but you talk about inappropriate transfer Saturday night just before I left Sunday morning. I got a transfer in from Anchorage by Learjet, and talk about somebody that doesn't need to be there to be discharged and then figure out how to get back to Alaska without any money. I mean, the system we have is really great at optimizing that impact. But what I wanted to say as an extension of what Art was saying, when he gave this great example of how you can, I think you can use, as you argue, Chuck, about using the episode of care to try and figure out what we don't know. But there's an amazing overlay to that, and I think, again, something which we should address, and that is, I think it almost has to be disease-specific driven on top of the regionalization plan, and that is, you know, a trauma system may be perfect to answer all the parallel questions that Art asks, but it may have nothing to do with the same question with an acute cardiac event, and it may not. It may or may not, but I think somehow we have to build a system that can analyze that the cardiac patient's going to go through the regionalization appropriately and cost-effectively the same way the trauma patient, using potentially totally different hospitals. And the system has to be able to feed that correctly to optimize the care and outcome. And then as the last extension is, somebody had mentioned earlier, we just don't want to reproduce the past I think it was also mentioned it's time to move on. One of the things that Chuck puts in his report is that he implies from his review that the system that has the most lists under its name, such as stroke or MI, is therefore the most mature and advanced, which I would argue with. Because one of the things we've done in trauma over the last 30 years is we went through a lot of that process monitoring approach, and that is if acute subdural is not operated on 4 hours, the process was not met and it's bad care. And as you notice, all those have disappeared over the last 30 years because they don't hold up as carved in stone approach to monitoring quality of care. And I think actually the longer the list means you haven't been in the game long enough to figure that out. And that, as we also heard, process may be time to move on and actually start looking at outcomes that are valid markers for the system. And if the system can produce a great outcome, then we can start looking at the components to individualize and make each of those better.
I would say yes, and in measuring outcomes and episodes in a true regional system, whether we define regional in terms of populations or geography, that it's population-based. So it's not just the outcomes of the 100 patients that we know about, but the 150 that we aren't capturing today. And that's what Mike Rapp properly said before the start of the morning. He said, from a CMS perspective, we want to know how are communities doing managing life threat X as a community. I already know whether or not Dr. Martinez can manage the patient with life threat X in front of them, but I want to know, can the community optimize outcomes within their population for people with that life-threatening condition? That requires a different data collection strategy than just the referral center and its registry in order to capture that type of information. Nick, you're up next.
The conversation reminds me of the question I asked on our telephone call about the definition of a system or a region, and I know that that's a million-dollar question, but for example, I know of hospitals that are licensed hospitals within their state but are unable to accept obstetrical patients, there's many hospitals where the physician is a family practice physician at home and is called to the emergency room and has 30 minutes to get there. There are a lot of different kinds of systems and different ways that they're implemented. So having some measurement or some way to compare could be important for helping those systems to mature or change or find the ideal way to implement their system.
Next.
Sally, I want to thank you for your comments, and this follows on to some of the others. And so, you know, in grappling with what your goals are in measuring care in a regionalized system, you know, I'm getting the idea that really what you're trying to do is to capture the background
of what's happening, as opposed to taking an FAA approach to, you know, having a top-down set of directives with inspectors and standards and so forth and so on. Am I right in that? You're trying to get a population-based background count and what emergency care looks like, and then back into what's happening in the region? Because that's different from the FAA approach, which says tomorrow we're going to write a book that says what do you need for a STEMI, and then we're going to send a bunch of people out to make sure that there's hospitals that can do it, and then we're going to measure whether or not they're doing it.
I can answer it from our perspective and get Sally's reflection. So this is a process, right? So the environmental scan, remember, we came up with those criteria. We came up with a search approach and proposed it and just used that as kind of an information document, right, just to show what would happen if one were to use that approach now. Clearly, the framework, I think, is to kind of identify where we are, where we need to go. Where do we have mature opportunities? Where do we need to develop some? And I think that there will be an ongoing process beyond that before a specific measure comes out, is endorsed, much less implemented, towards Brandon's comments. But Sally, I'll defer to you.
I think how you stated it is right. We're looking to set a framework, not a strict set of rules about what it's going to look like. We want to signal to measure developers. We want to signal to those who are building the systems, those who are maintaining them, how we might evaluate and assess as we continue to improve quality of care that is paying attention to the resource allocation throughout our system. So I think it's a fair way to think about it. So NQF doesn't collect the data or develop measures, right? So what we're trying to do is get the experts together that will help inform those who then do look to build the data systems, to help inform those who do develop the measures. So that's a good question, and I think that to the extent that there are recommendations or suggestions that come out of this expert group, we would want to share that with that community within our quality enterprise.
Mr. McCullough and then Dr. Kuski. Just in follow-up to the invitation that Sally made about looking out of the box a bit more, one of my concerns is just in general and the barriers and implementation. And I'm just going to pick on our home state of Georgia here, of our noncompliance now with so many things that have been the national standards for decades. And I think no matter whatever system we create, until we can get at the local level the fire chiefs, the EMS directors, the hospital administrators who are willing to give up what are their perceived market shares, then we're not going to have success at whatever is created. And so I'm hoping that's something that may come out of this as well, is whether we increase our stakeholders at the table, but unless we get the buy-in from fire chiefs and local EMS directors who are going to willing to embrace a national standard and to even follow any kind of national guidelines, and I'm afraid a decade from now we're still here, still not implementing what was approved 20 years ago.
Dr. Kuski. Taking that a step further, one of the issues that's retarded the development of regionalization and systems is the EMTALA laws. And the EMTALA laws until recently, the regulations have not specified how CMS would approve of community call systems. And community is a large term. It doesn't necessarily just refer to a city, but it may refer to a state. And whenever this is done, I think we're going to have to pay attention to those regulations, because they will certainly affect whether any regionalization system is effective or not. And so I think that needs to be a consideration. It's a little bit tangential to what you're talking about, but it's a key issue that has to be dealt with, I believe.
Arthur.
I can't stand my tag up because it's on the floor, so forgive me. I want to build a little bit off Ron Mayer's comments. We've had a lot of experience in New York State with population-based trauma registry. And as Ron has indicated, one of the things that we've discovered is that unless you're actually doing the individual risk-adjusted measures for the individual diseases that you wish to study, you're not going to have a true picture of what's going on. hospitals that you would think on the basis of, you know, academic excellence, high volume, et cetera, are not always the best performers. In fact, there are many, many performers that have low volumes and aren't publishing a whole lot of papers that have outstanding risk-adjusted mortality statistics. Developing a population-based trauma registry, you know, with all the bells and whistles and collecting data on every single, patient is difficult enough when you multiply that by X number of emergency conditions. It becomes really a formidable task, easier now with an electronic medical record. But one of the things that we have learned is that if administrative data is constructed in a way that it includes at least an initial set of vital signs from the first, from an emergency department visit, a first set of vital signs builds in the physiologic component, therefore the time-sensitive component, that plus, a few basic items of interest from the emergency department record, coupled with the discharge data abstract data set that's available in virtually every single state and territory at this point, gets pretty darn close in terms of the validity and reliability of the data to what you would get with a trauma registry. So I think as we look toward the future, and I'm thinking of Sally's comments here, unless we're really looking at the outcomes, unless we use the tools that we have, maybe enhance them very slightly across the board, we're going to be missing, I think, a great deal of opportunity for improvement.
Can I make a brief, a brief comment? I agree. I mean, I think that we clearly need to have the data systems in place. I think they have to recognize how we cross the units of service. Then we have to think about what an episode of care is and where it starts and where the critical elements of the data required to evaluate that episode of care. And, I like the emergency department vital signs. Imagine if we extended that to the EMS vital signs for those that intersect first with the EMS system.
Chuck, it's always dangerous when I don't see name tags up because it gives me an opportunity to ask another question or two. But as we roll into lunchtime, because I feel like with no obvious candidate for toxicology or for mental health at the table, could you talk for a moment about the, quote, absence of any measures in either of those domains? I think I was struck at the comment in the draft that, well, we didn't see anything for acute psychiatry because it's sort of available everywhere, and I might have thought you would have said it's sort of available nowhere. And so given that we don't have an emergency psychiatrist at the table, could you just elaborate for a moment on what either wasn't there or what needs to be there to capture behavioral health, which is an enormous challenge in this country, a major cause of morbidity, and a not inconsequential cause of mortality from suicide, family violence, and the like?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with both your comments that psychiatric care is a big challenge and needs to be addressed. I would hope that it would be addressed in the framework and toxicology. So on psychiatric care, I think one of the challenges in terms of looking at measures from an NQF perspective is that they're just not there. And that doesn't mean that they shouldn't be there. So imagine the components that would be important. One would be how to match patients with need, how to address acuity, how to develop interventions that are impactful within a time frame, especially identify any of those that are associated with short-term mortality or severe morbidity. And then the issues that we've discussed here in terms of access, infrastructure, a regionalized approach, including recognition of geography and all-inclusive patient populations, would seem to me to be a good start. And if I were to take a look at the episode of care, I can imagine that the phase one would be to be sure that there is a system of identification of where psychiatric emergency patients intersect the system and how they are best served. Phase two would potentially include everything from evaluation and risk stratification to communication between emergency and psychiatric providers, between resources available, and patients regarding the need, and I would hope to develop some standardized care that would show an impact on outcomes. And then the phase three side is to figure out how we can intersect the system, the entire emergency system, to better serve this population of people with a huge chronic demand for services where severity is clearly demonstrated. That's first shot, Art. Secondly, on toxicology. You know, toxicology does have a series of papers and a series of conditions where time has been shown to make a difference. So, for example, would be bicarbonate and tricyclic antidepressant toxicity, and there's a time sensitivity to it. There's a characterization, intervention, mortality-reducing effect. So EKG, both of it's based on electrocardiogram characterization, and so EKGs are fairly universal and bicarb's fairly universally available. How that integrates, though, into a geography of, say, poison control centers and serves every patient within a population geography so that they can get the benefit of that time-saving intervention would be an example of another episode of care approach. So phase one would be, how do you intersect poison centers and other readily accessible information systems? How do they either determine destinations or triage, or similar to your telemedicine approach, to apply to populations? And then for an episode of care, how does that system then deliver patients to the appropriate care setting to get that life-saving intervention? So I think you could use the episode of care framework for both of those conditions. Dr. Kellerman, I do think that I appreciate Dr. Mayer's approach that disease specificity may be important, although I recognize the EMS paradigms that patients don't necessarily differentiate themselves. And so we've got this challenge of undifferentiated conditions that's really going to be a key component of all-inclusive geographical-based systems. And maybe there are going to be strategies that can do it, whether it's telemedicine, whether it's EMS triage, whether it's some new form of systems. 911 to me seems like another opportunity, just because it's an immediate access point. But those are initial thoughts, sir.
One could imagine measures like suicide within 24 hours of an emergency department visit as a measure of bad outcome. Another might be length of time from presentation emergency department to admission to an inpatient unit for involuntary commitment, currently measured in days rather than hours in many communities. But
in fact, you're absolutely right. And you know, during the scan, you can imagine the universe of potential things one can look at in this. So, you know, like the SAD person scale, which is supposed to be a suicide predictive scale, you know, if we could have a valid, specific, applicable measure that's been proven to make that difference, that could be universally applied, well, I can imagine that'd be a great performance metric. And so, for example, NIH just put out a recent UO1 to try to develop that so it can be applied. And so obviously that would then be a wonderful measure for us to consider, or certainly a gap to identify.
Okay, we'll go to Helen and then to Howard, and then we're going to break for lunch. This is a very energetic session.
Great. Just one overarching comment as you think through the framework and the domains and the subdomains. It's important to consider which kinds of measures could actually live in a non-disease specific mode and which ones require that they don't. I would argue a good number of these cross-cutting domains, like care coordination and communication, I would hope you would not have us wind up with thousands of measures for every disease entity, and instead think about what's cross-cutting and what works best, especially considering there's a team approach for many of these. And then specifically the four conditions where you think that's really important, I would argue those should be branches off this framework and then identify the key domains and subdomains for those key areas. But otherwise you wind up with literally care coordination measures for every condition, and that's not optimal either.
We're going to indulge my traumatic colleague from Washington State here for a moment.
Because I'm being traumatized. No, but I just wanted to reemphasize what you said. I think you're absolutely correct. In fact, if anything, if you look at the current processes and standards that are being used, they're sort of picked for disease being totally different than they shouldn't be. I mean, the vast majority should be standardized across, and I think that's a big thing that's missing, as seen in the survey, is that we haven't done that.
Howard, you get the last word.
Okay. Well, this is more in the nature of food for thought, and since it's time for food, I'll be brief.
Not for food.
One of the bits of background noise that's giving me some difficulty getting my head around all of this points to the need to, you know, sort of begin with the end in mind. And I'm kind of cluttered by how are these going to be used, because a lot of the discussion we've had, there's somebody who's used the word pay for performance before in the background, and there's other compensation issues. So it would help me focus in on the target if we could talk a little bit more about how these are going to be used. Second point, we've talked about a variety of domains, and we haven't mentioned patient or customer satisfaction in there. And I think the greatest system you develop will fail if the people who are supposed to use it hate it. So satisfaction is an issue. And third, and I'm glad you brought up the example you did, when we talk about EMS, I'd like folks to keep in mind that EMS is more than just transporting patients to hospitals. We've just undertaken a project that, among its pieces, utilizes EMS providers in the field to get mental health patients to the right resource rather than just delivering them all to the back door of the emergency department. In our community, a mental health patient will consume a monitored ED bed for 14 hours before they can be replaced. When we did the arithmetic the other day, we had made enough room for 500 additional chest pain patients to be evaluated by keeping those people out of the ED. So there's a lot more to be contributed by than transportation. Thank you.
Reminds me of another historic document courtesy of NHTSA, the EMS Agenda for the Future, which talked about a number of these topics many years ago. Okay, that was an excellent morning session. We are going to break for lunch. We reconvene at 12:45, and my colleague, Mr. Rozak, will chair the first afternoon session.